What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Recording this on Thursday, February 20th. We had some news surrounding Victor Wembanyama that I will touch on briefly with him being out for the season. But I also had another guest on today, Gerald Bourguet, who is a Phoenix Suns reporter and media member out in Phoenix. So talked all things Suns with him today, just about can they turn this thing around? What's gone wrong for them this year? What are their plans in the offseason? And just all things surrounding the Phoenix Suns. So with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. Cool. So we've got Gerald Bourguet on the show today. He's the lead writer for PHNX Sports, specifically covering the Phoenix Suns. Also is the co-host for PHNX Suns podcast, and is also a credentialed media member that's been covering the Suns for the better part of a decade. So thank you so much for hopping on, Gerald. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sean. How about you?
I'm good. I just figured, you know, with the Suns kind of up and down roller coaster season, having somebody like you on felt like an appropriate time. A lot to discuss with just all the things that have transpired this season with Phoenix. Obviously not exactly having the season that they or their fans had hoped for. So I just kicking us off, I mean, it seems like on paper, the Suns this season should have been better than they were last season. I mean, with a lot of the changes they made in the offseason, what was presumed to be an upgrade with Mike Budenholzer going to him from Frank Vogel, you know, coming into this year's Bud was a top 10 coach all time from a winning percentage perspective. And then just looking down the roster, I mean, Tyus and Monte Morris added. A lot of people talked about how point guard was a bit of an issue for this team last year. They addressed that issue, getting a full season out of Royce O'Neal. Mason Plumlee looked like an upgrade over Drew Eubanks. They've got some younger guys with Ryan Dunn and Oso Iguodaro, added Nick Richards at the deadline. And then even just with the continuity between getting another season under their belt with Beal, Booker, and Durant. So it seemed like they should, in theory, be better than last year, but obviously that just has not been the case, with them sitting at 26 and 28 and going 18 and 27 since their 8-1 start. So just wanted to get your take in terms of why do you think that the season has kind of just gone haywire for them this year and that they haven't been able to even just at a bare minimum replicate what they did last year?
Yeah, it's kind of a litany of problems that the Suns have, and I hate to be the expert that hops on your show and not really be able to give you straight answers, but it is baffling. This team on paper should be a lot better than they've been and a lot better than they were last season even. You know, you look at Frank Vogel, what he did last year, and the way that he reportedly lost the locker room, it certainly felt that way at times, but he was still able to extract a borderline top 10 defense out of a similar team. And a lot of people were saying, the Suns are 13th in defensive rating. He's supposed to be a defensive coach. I think that was more a testament to what he was able to do with the personnel that he had, because the Suns are currently sitting at like 25th in defensive rating this year. And I think a lot of it, to me, it has to do with the center spot. The Suns have had one of the worst center rotations in the NBA all season long. You know, Jusuf Nurkić did not look like the same Nurk that we saw last season. I know he still had a lot of the same flaws, but statistically with him on the court, the Suns were about 11 possessions or points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than they were with him off last year. And this year it was almost the exact inverse there. And then you look at the backup, like Mason Plumlee has been better than Drew Eubanks, but he still has his notable flaws. He's obviously, you know, 34, 35 years old, so he's getting up there. And Oso Iguodaro is an undersized rookie who I really like his game. I think he should be getting more minutes, but at the end of the day, he's going to make rookie mistakes. He's going to have his shortcomings. So you've got three centers that all have notable flaws. You go out and get Nick Richards and send Nurkić away before the trade deadline. But Richards is also, you know, a guy who has his flaws. He brings some real things to the table I think the Suns should tap into. But, you know, he's a starting caliber fringe backup kind of guy for a Hornets team that was not winning a ton of games. So the center spot's been a big problem. And for me, you know, the big three is not playing as well together as they were last year. Devin Booker has had a bit of a rougher season. He's gotten it back on track since the calendar flipped. But I think part of it is that they're trotting out a lot of three guard lineups. And Last year, it worked with Grayson Allen, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker. This year, getting even smaller with Tyus Jones in that mix. It hasn't worked. Jones has been a liability defensively. They're playing him off the ball quite a bit because he doesn't create the same advantages with the ball in his hands that Booker and Beal and KD do. So they're not really letting the point guard that they brought in to be a point guard be a point guard, which kind of, you know, you're misusing him and making him a spot up shooter most of the time who just dribbles the ball up the court and then gives it to someone else. So there's so many different avenues we could go down here, but it does kind of feel like whatever Bud has tried to implement, there's just not a ton of belief or buy-in or trust either in what they're trying to execute or, you know, their fellow teammate at this point.
Yeah. And I think the bigger issue, kind of what you touched on there, is the breadth of issues. You know, it's not really one single thing that's been the problem for them. You touched on the center position and, you know, like Nurkic, to your point, I mean, I think that there's a narrative around like that he's just a terrible player, which for all intents and purposes, he played that way this season. But it is easy to forget, like, he was pretty solid for them last year and a huge part of what they were doing, especially on the defensive end of the court. He was a lot less sloppy with the ball and was able to make some things happen as sort of the tertiary, secondary playmaker that they maybe needed since they didn't have that point guard spot. But then even Nick Richards coming in, you know, it's been kind of a up and down ride. You know, I think when he first came in, people were really excited about what they saw out of him, just doing kind of the bare minimum center things like running the floor, rebounding the ball, protecting the rim. But, you know, in their last seven games, he hasn't had a positive plus minus one single time. They're a minus 22.9 net rating in the last seven games with him on the court. And there's been some games where they're closing without him, whether it be going to Mason Plumlee or going small. So again, that feels like more of a interim solution to kind of an overarching problem at the center spot. And then, like you mentioned, with the size being an issue, I mean, I know Suns fans joke all the time about how it's just a team of shooting guards and Kevin Durant, but it does feel like that sometimes, you know, not only just with the size, but the style of play. And so I think all of that stuff's super valid. One other thing that I just want to bring up is, which the hope was that Bud was going to help alleviate some of this, but the shot profile also has not been good for them, especially as of late. I know the three-point shooting percentage of shots there is up a little bit from what it was last year. I think they were in the bottom 10 of the league last year, but they're a little bit more middle of the pack, but they still are dead last in the NBA in percentage of shots taken at the rim, so they don't create any rim pressure on that end of the court. They are still top two in the league in percentage of mid-range shots taken. And then even from three, I mean, they were top six in terms of shots taken from there before mid-December. And since then, they're back more towards in the 15 range. So they've kind of gotten into more of those bad habits. And so it's just a lot of the same issues that they've had, but they're compounding with all the things you mentioned. So it's been hard to pinpoint, even as a fan, to say like, yep, this is the quick fix we need. And I think that's why the front office has maybe struggled a little bit as well to figure out what to do. So,
yeah, exactly. It's you plug one hole and two more open up. It kind of feels like with this team, and you mentioned it too earlier in the season, they were taking a lot of threes. They had finally fixed a little bit of their shot profile. Like you mentioned, they don't get to the rim. This team, the Suns haven't gotten to the rim. They've been like a bottom five team in that category. It feels like since
the Chris Paul era, really. Yeah.
Like they just don't have guys that get to the rim. But it felt like they went through a 3 or 4 week stretch there where they just got completely away from taking threes. They weren't generating those same volume of looks. Recently, they've started to kind of trend back in the right direction there, but without having that rim pressure, without having guys outside of Book and KD that really get to the free throw line on top of that, you're making it a lot more challenging. And that's why you have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant to make some of those tough shots. We know what they can do in the mid-range and in a playoff series that can help you, but not if you're a bottom five, bottom six defense, if you're not getting to the rim, if you're not getting to the free throw line, you know, and if you have a point guard who's not creating advantages for you and is mostly playing off the ball and giving up baskets on the other end, it's just, it's a lot of everything that could go wrong has gone wrong, it feels like.
No, it's true. And even to the point of like the 3-point shooting and not getting the basket, like if you look at the other bottom five teams in terms of teams that don't shoot that many shots near the basket, it's a lot of teams that the reason they're not shooting a ton of shots at the basket is because they're shooting a ton of threes. Like Boston's actually in the bottom five in percentage of shots at the rim. Golden State is at the bottom five. But those are teams that like they can get away with it because they're not playing an archaic style, shooting a bunch of mid-range. And to your point, like, the personnel will just, when you've got a guy like Booker and Durant and even Beal to an extent, like, you're going to probably be among the league leaders in mid-range. But you've got to find ways to kind of, like, alleviate the cons that come with that. And to your point, like, I really liked what you brought up about Tyus Jones kind of playing more off ball, because it does feel like he's been doing that a lot more recently, and teams have absolutely been picking on him on the defensive end. And so it's sort of funny to hear, like, last year all the talk was the Suns need a point guard, like, Booker is not a true lead guard, whatever. And then this year I feel like I've seen a lot of people advocating for Booker to be the lead guard again, like, move Tyus to the bench, let him run the second unit, and let kind of Booker, Beal, and Durant handle more of the ball handling duty, which is just, like, tells you all you need to know. Like, maybe neither of those things are the issue. It's all the external things around it, because it's like the grass is always greener regarding things like that. So,
no, absolutely. And I think, like, the turnovers, like, Tyus Jones and Monte Morris have helped in that regard. Like, I think they're only 13th in the NBA in turnovers, and last year they were 25th. So it was a very big problem for them last year.
Yeah.
But they still have these rashes of turnovers in games, like, where they have one disastrous quarter, and yeah, that is enough to do them in. They give up a ton of offensive rebounds. They're not a good rebounding team. It literally just is every possible thing. And it is tough, because I it's nothing personal against Tyus. I think he's one of many players on this team who has been used out of position or had to be pigeonholed into a role that is not ideally suited to what they can do best. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm one of the people that is saying you should probably bench Tyus Jones. You probably benched the wrong guard when you sent Bradley Beal to the bench. And it's nothing personal against Tyus. He's not being used properly, and the Suns starting lineup is kind of suffering as a result of that.
Yeah. And that's a good point. And just segueing into, like, do you think that there are any rotation, whether it be rotation or on the court, adjustments from, like, a playing style perspective, within reason, obviously? I mean, they could shoot way more threes than that would help, but just anything along those lines that you think could help turn this thing around, or, you know, maybe not turn it around, but at the very least, like, give them a little bit of juice. I know Bud kind of has been throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks between, like, Bol Bol's been starting games recently. Like I said, Nick Richards has not been closing games. They've been trying some small ball. Ryan Dunn's role has been super inconsistent. I mean, I think he had, like, a 15 game stretch where he was starting every game, getting 25 plus minutes. And then in the last 11 games, he's got a DMP coach's decision and has played only 11 minutes per game. So his shooting's down across the board, but I think that's a little bit to be expected for a rookie when he's not able to get into any sort of rhythm with consistent playing time. So do you see any sort of move? I know you kind of alluded to Tyus maybe potentially running the second unit, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest one. And I think if you look at the numbers for the big three with Tyus Jones this season versus without him, they're a plus, like, 36 in their minutes without Tyus Jones, and like a minus 25 when they're sharing the court with Tyus Jones. So I think you go back to playing your best players again. I think a lot of the impetus behind benching Bradley Beal was to get him to consider waiving that no trade clause. Well, the trade deadline is passed. He's still on the roster. You need to evaluate whether this big three truly is something that you are going to have to grin and bear it moving forward because of his no trade clause, or if this is something you have to find a way to trade him over the summer, and or Kevin Durant, because you already dangled him at the trade deadline. You probably made him angry with that. He didn't want to be traded. But if he does want to be traded now, or if you are still trying to trade him to avoid paying him, you know, a 2-year extension beyond this season, you need to know what works, what doesn't work, and how you're going to build around Devin Booker moving forward. So evaluate to that to the fullest. I know you made a promise to Tyus Jones when he first came here that he would be the starting point guard, but I'm sorry, he's a vet minimum guy. He was probably going to be gone this summer either way, whether the season was a success or not. And it's just baffling that they would bench a $50 million guy that they probably made promises to when they first lured him into forcing his way here over a vet minimum guy. Like, you got to give it, you got to put your best players on the floor. I'm baffled by some of the lineups that we haven't seen. Like, for example, Booker, Bradley Beal, KD, Ryan Dunn, and Nick Richards. That lineup has played 0 minutes together so far, which,
wow, that is crazy.
That would be kind of like my go-to starting lineup.
Yeah,
and it's not, hasn't even seen the floor yet. That's crazy. You know, I think last year's starting lineup with Nick Richards and Yusuf Nurkic's place, that has only seen 19 minutes of action. You know, and if you want to keep bringing Bradley Beal off the bench for whatever reason and put Grayson Allen in his place, well, guess what? Booker, Grayson, KD, Dunn, Richards also seen 0 minutes together. Like, yeah, these are lineups that you need to be trotting out there because those are, you know, five or six of your best players that we're talking about here. So I want to see that. I do want to see more minutes for Ryan Dunn. I feel like he was in the midst of his best month of the season in January when those last three games, you know, he tweaked his ankle and his minutes haven't been the same since then. And we've been getting conflicting messages from Bud when I've asked him about, okay, is he hurt or is it just you're kind of tapering off his minutes? One night it was, well, we need him to do this, this, and that. The other night it was, well, his, you know, he needs to be fully healthy. He looked healthy during the Rising Stars Challenge and All-Star Weekend.
He did. So, he looked good. Yeah.
So there's really no excuse for him to be playing any less than 15 to 20 minutes a night, especially if you're keeping him in the starting role. Those are two of the big ones for me. I really want to see them evaluate Cody Martin. I want to see them evaluate Nick Richards and actually let him close games, because I know the net rating for him has been rough. You mentioned it earlier. But I think a lot of that is just trying to familiarize himself with a new team. He's only been here a couple of weeks. The rosters, the lineups have continually changed since he's been here as well.
Yeah.
That makes it tough to get your feet wet and understand what is expected of you, terminology, all of that stuff. So I really just want to see more sensical rotations from Bud. The Suns have this toughest strength of schedule left in the NBA.
Yeah.
So there's a very good chance they're in a play-in spot, maybe not even in the play-in in a couple of weeks. I want to see them evaluating for not just this season, but beyond it. Who needs to stay here? What do we have in our two rookies who we've somehow phased out of the rotation, even though we need their defense and energy and just youthful exuberance? So those are kind of the big things. I don't think anything's going to save the Suns season at this point. Their best case scenario is probably a first round playoff exit, which is crazy to say about a team that has Booker and KD. But at this rate, you'll kind of take that as something maybe we can build on that when we restructure a lot of the pieces around Booker over the summer.
Yeah. And I'm with you on pretty much almost all what you said. I mean, I think Ryan Dunn definitely needs to get more minutes because he's just, we don't have enough guys where, like, when they're out there, it just feels like good things happen, which was the sad part of the Richards trade is Okogie felt like he was one of those guys, at least at times when he would get extended minutes, you know, just a magnet to the ball, like high energy. His shot was coming around, but Dunn does a lot of those same things, but he's got more size, obviously younger, hopefully can blossom into a more just polished player as time goes on. But like, yeah, you got to see what he has out there, especially when we talk about they don't have a lot of size in the perimeter. They're 27th in the NBA in defensive rating. Like, those are all the things that he brings to the team. So to not have him out there just feels like a disservice. To your point on some of the other lineups, I mean, yeah, if they're going to use Tyus as sort of a spot up corner shooter, it's like there's no reason that Grayson or Beal shouldn't be in that spot. I mean, Allen's been shooting way better in the second half. I know he got off to kind of a rough start to the season, but I think he's up to 43% on the season. So if that tells anything, I think he had like a stretch of above 50% for a couple weeks or something like that. But yeah, I those two lineups you mentioned with the Beal, Booker, Dunn, KD, and Richards, and then Allen in the spot of Beal, like, to me, those seem like, I agree with you, the natural fits for, even if you don't want to do starting lineup with no point guard, at least a closing lineup, you know? Yeah. The only thing I will say about Beal, though, it is weird that the numbers with him this year, with just him on the court and then the other guys on the court, like, the net rating for Beal being on the court with Booker and Durant is only a plus 0.3. But then when you have just Beal on the court alone, they've been plus 17.5. And then if you look at Beal with just Booker, they're a minus 13.5. Beal with just KD, they're a minus 15.3. So something has obviously not clicked with him and the other two guys. It's weird. And it could just be as simple as like one of those guys has to play out of position basically when they're on the court. Either one of them's at the three and they're facing a bigger, longer defender, or one of them is forced to initiate, but they're both capable of that. So is there anything you're seeing in terms of why maybe those guys haven't meshed this year?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to, I'm curious what the numbers would look like when you compare what Beal looks like with those two or with Booker when Tyus is on the court and when he's not. Because to your point, I think last year, like the net rating for Booker and Beal on the court was positive. It was overwhelmingly positive when the three of them were on the court together, but they weren't also sharing the court with an undersized defensive liability.
It's fair.
And I think
not that Grayson's some defensive stalwart, but I get the point though. Yeah.
Right. And I think offensively it's complicated by the fact that, you know, when you have the big three out there, yes, Beal is going to be the third wheel. When you have Tyus Jones out there as well, Beal is going to be the fourth guy in terms of having the ball in their hands. And I think so when you go from that being fourth in the pecking order in terms of having the ball in your hands to it's just me on the court, I'm going to go do my thing, it gets a lot clearer and a lot less muddied for him. I think last year they did a much better job of kind of walking that line. And I also do think like last year, Bradley Beal also dealt with injuries. That's not unique to this season versus last season. But I think last year it was more elongated stretches as opposed to this year. It feels like it's been more in fits and spasms in terms of when they come. And I think it's harder to develop a rhythm, especially when you're trying to adjust to, okay, now we have a point guard on top of KD and Book to feed. I think that makes it a little bit more difficult. You know, Beal's been a professional. He's done well coming off the bench. But his numbers are relatively the same in terms of minutes, in terms of points, in terms of all of that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, again, you made the mistake of erring on the side of appeasing a vet minimum guy and trying to make his role with the team work, which it doesn't. And you've made it harder for, like, you needed to make it easier on your $50 million guy who's a better player than on your vet minimum point guard who can come in off the bench and run the second unit. So I am really looking forward to down the stretch of the season. Does Bud actually veer away from Tyus in that starting lineup, or does he really believe that they need a traditional point guard just to get the ball across half court before giving it to one of the other guys?
Yeah, and then going to stand in the corner. That's a good point. You kind of gave your answer to this, but I want to just ask more pointedly, like, do you have any level of optimism for them the rest of the season? I mean, if you want to look at it through a positive lens, they obviously did start the year 8-1. They're 23-11 when Booker and Durant both play, which is 55 win pace. But conversely, that means they are 3-17 when one of them misses. So the margin for error is literally zero. I mean, you can just pencil it in as a loss if one of them misses a game, basically. But do you think there's any reason to be optimistic for the rest of the year? You mentioned they've got the toughest schedule remaining, or do you think that they're just kind of cooked this year?
Yeah, it's tough because you never want to count out a team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant on it, especially when Durant is still playing. I mean, he's averaging the most points per game in an age 36 season in NBA history. Like what he's doing at this age is absurd. And we've seen Devin Booker be able to turn it on, and he has turned it on in January. Yeah. With that being said, Booker has struggled against good defenses and good teams this season for whatever reason. And despite KD being absolutely absurd for his age, it hasn't, you know, carried the Suns to success. They have too many pieces that are out of place around those two for me to have any faith. I watch this team play and I just see, it's not that these guys don't care or that they're not trying or anything like that, but when you are a team that kind of understands what it is and you don't have that full buy-in to whatever you're running, you don't have that belief in what you're doing, you don't have that consistent execution and attention to detail, that is a team to me that just is never going to figure it out, and that drastic change is needed either at the head coaching spot, in terms of the roster pieces, in terms of the way that the guys at the top lead, whether you're talking about front office, coaching, KD and Book themselves, something needs to change because the equation just isn't working. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you can't change the head coach because you just did that last year and, you know, going to another championship winning coach from the past, like that should prove that it's on the players. I think you can get a coaching hire wrong a couple of times. And based on some of the rotations that I've seen with Bud, I'm not really optimistic about what they're currently doing. You know, I'm still going to give it these next 2 months to evaluate because hopefully they just needed a reset at the All-Star break to kind of get away from each other, come back to it and realize, okay, we're two games under 500. It's go time now, and maybe embrace the strength of schedule that they're coming up against. But just based on the basketball I've seen this team play this season, I think they're going to get their teeth kicked in over the next few weeks by better competition. And I think it's going to be very demoralizing and very revealing to everyone involved that big changes are needed over the summer.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, it's one of those, like, you take a step back and you're like, well, I mean, you look at the teams around us and on paper should have more talent and should, like, more pedigree to an extent. So you'd think, like, the Kings just trade away De'Aaron Fox. Wembanyama, I don't know if you saw, but he's mm-hmm. been out for the year now. So there are some other teams that theoretically could fall back. And then if they sneak in the play-in, you know, who knows? Anthony Davis out for a while. Dallas could be. So there's a lot of teams that I think in theory that we should see them potentially pass. But and then you watch the games and it's like, well, why would I believe in this team? Because it every time they either have one quarter that kills them or they just come out flat or whatever it may be. And they can't, to your point, like they're missing something. And I don't know if it's, I'm sure part of it is personnel based, but also part of it feels sort of like the intangibles of the team that just aren't necessarily there. So I guess at the very least, it's kind of a win-win where if they prove us wrong and go on some run, then obviously that'll be good for the team and the franchise and their fans. But if they don't and they fall flat, kind of like you alluded to, then at least it shows sort of like a litmus test on the team to say, like, look, I mean, this was about as ugly and as bad as it gets. So mm-hmm. something has to change. And so just on that topic, obviously there was a lot of talk about KD potentially being moved at the deadline and if that was actually going to happen or not. It ultimately did not happen. But do you think that it was smart of them to, one, to hold on to him at the deadline instead of just shipping him out for whatever the reported Warriors offer was? Or do you think they should have potentially just cashed in on trading KD now while the Warriors were desperate? And then regardless of that, do you think that in the offseason that they should potentially look to trade him? And do you think ultimately they will?
Yeah, so first part of that question, I don't think they should have been dangling him at the trade deadline without his knowledge in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I had one source tells me that was all made up, but all of the multiple reports that we heard were that they were dangling him and that he and his agent found out about it after the fact mm-hmm. or later in that process, and that Durant himself was the one who shut down that trade. Kevin Durant alluded to it himself that he did not want to leave Phoenix. He didn't want to go play in Golden State. So all of the reporting is that they were dangling him. And I've had multiple sources since then tell me that that was the case. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should have been doing that in the first place. If you were going to do that, you had to move him regardless of what he wanted. He doesn't have a no trade clause. If you're going to consider trading Kevin Durant, you had to do it. I think it would have been dumb to do that, but you cannot dangle him, have him find out about it, and then not do it, because now you've ruined that relationship. And that's something that's going to fester, especially if the next few months of basketball don't go according to plan, which all signs mm-hmm. are indicating that this is going downhill right now. So now you're approaching a summer where your best player for the last 2 years probably feels some type of way. And to his credit, like, KD has not said that he wants out, that he's going to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, his response is always, you got to ask the guys at the front office what they think. Like, you guys are always asking me how I feel about Phoenix or whether I want to be here. They mm-hmm. were the ones dangling me. It wasn't my choice. So I think exploring a Kevin Durant trade at the deadline is not crazy. I wouldn't have done it. But if you were going to do it, it had to be for some type of deal that makes more sense than just Jimmy Butler. Like, why are you mm-hmm. trading Kevin Durant to have the right to pay Jimmy Butler a 2 year or 3 year extension when Jimmy Butler's only a year younger, has had a worse injury history lately, and is a worse player? Like, why are you downgrading in that regard? It just didn't make sense, especially with the lack of draft capital or young players that you would be getting. If you're trading Kevin Durant, it is to quickly retool to put established players, young prospects to develop, and picks around Devin Booker to reassure him, like, we're not going full rebuild. We're going to be competitive now, and we have mm-hmm. assets now to quickly retool and restructure this thing. So that Jimmy Butler trade never made sense to me. And I think now you're at a point where you have to consider that type of package over the summer, especially if Durant still feels some type of way about this.
Yeah, no, I agree. And to me, the Butler thing never really made any sense either. I know that it was reported they were going to get stuff on top of that, but to me, it's like, you got to cast as wide a net as possible when you're trading a guy like Durant. I know apparently that's the cool thing to do these days, is not do that with mm-hmm. the Luka stuff. But like, there's so many teams that aren't suitors now that maybe might be suitors in the offseason. I've mentioned Houston, Oklahoma City. They kind of probably want to see where they're at come postseason time. But if they fall flat, you know, that there's teams suddenly start getting a little bit more sense of urgency in terms of, do we want to add a guy like Kevin Durant or something like that? So to me, that makes the most sense. Teams like that who have young, already impact level guys that could come in and help improve this team from athleticism, a youth defense, all those things on that end. But then also all of the draft capital in the world that you could potentially want or need, especially in Houston's case, where they actually have Phoenix's picks, which could become extra valuable to them. So yeah. I think I agree with that.
And now you've made the mistake of getting Durant and the agent involved, because if you were dangling them and this traded them somewhere, now you're giving them time to kind of, you know, give that dreaded wish list that stars have now in terms of, you know, I want to go here. I'm going to force my way here. I'm going to tell teams that if you trade for me, I'm not going to play for you. I've only got 1 year left on my contract. I have the leverage here. And that is a problem for working out trades where you actually get good value back for superstars. So now you've opened that whole can of worms. I still think the Suns at this point, their top priority should be trying to find somewhere to send Bradley Beal, even if you have to attach a first round pick. Find somewhere that he's willing to waive his no trade clause for. Find somewhere that's willing to take him on if you give them a first round pick for their troubles. Because I really do believe you can build a winning team around this version of Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. I just think they went about it the wrong way and they struck out on how they chose to do it. So, but if you can't deal Beal, if that's not realistic, then yeah, KD is the piece that makes the most sense as much as it sucks.
Yeah. I think that if you get to a point where you kind of back against the wall, have no choice, then, you know, Durant is kind of the break glass, get out of jail free card, unfortunately, which I don't think he or Suns fans or the Suns front office really wants to get to that point. But yeah, I think Beal and the inflexibility that adding him is just created for this team is sort of the unwinding of how this got to where it is. And I agree with you. I think that a Devin Booker and Kevin Durant in their current state, they can still be close. I don't know about winning a championship, but a really good team if you've got the right pieces around them. And the only way to really make that happen is to somehow find someone to take on that Beal contract. And so if it's one pick, two pick, do they even get up to three? Like, I think it's something that you have to at least consider, even though as crazy as that sounds to trade someone of his talent with multiple picks. But it's kind of either that or you're just throwing in the towel on this core and just, you know, it is what it is at that point. So,
yep. And when you get to that point, you are running the risk of alienating your franchise star who has been here for a decade, who is the face of the franchise, arguably one of the best players to ever suit up for the Suns, and someone who has been extremely patient and loyal throughout that entire process. So I know that Devin Booker wants to retire a Sun. I know that that's not on his mind. But if things get drastic enough, if you don't nail what's coming next over this upcoming offseason, that is when we start to see stars potentially feel disgruntled and feel alienated and feel like my prime is winding down. I have to capitalize on these years that are left, and I no longer believe that this front office can get me there. So something to keep an eye on for sure.
And they're lucky that Booker feels that way, like completely, because like most players wouldn't. So I think you're right that like it hasn't been perfect, but they'd have an opportunity to still like convince him to stay around and fulfill that kind of dream that he has to stay with the franchise. But they have to get the next piece right. Totally agree. They cannot sell KD for a quarter on the dollar. You know what I mean? They have to get something meaningful back. And if they aren't able to move Beal, they got to at least figure something out that can't just be like, oh, we added another Nick Richards level center and another 6'4 good shooter to space the floor, you know?
Yep, exactly.
But thank you so much, Gerald, for hopping on. I really appreciate the time. And yeah, it was a pleasure chatting Suns with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So we did actually get some pretty big news today as well, that Victor Wembanyama will miss the remainder of this season with a kind of rare form of blood clotting called deep vein thrombosis, which it sounds like they caught it pretty early, but obviously this is not great news for San Antonio across the board, just because, look, they had a real chance to kind of make a push to the playoffs with Fox in the fold now. They are currently the 12 seed, but only two games out of the loss column from the 10 seed in the play-in. And look, when you get to the play-in with a guy like Wemby, anything can happen. So it's I still think they had a real shot to at least make some noise in the play-in, maybe make the playoffs as like an 8 seed or something like that. But it was always going to be a transition year. I mean, the rest of the roster around Wemby to start the season was nothing special, certainly not a playoff caliber roster. And then you add De'Aaron Fox to the fold and things get more interesting, but it is still a mid-season trade. And there's some kinks they need to kind of iron out, specifically the guard rotation. I mean, they've been playing Chris Paul with Fox, which has been a little bit of a clunky fit so far. So, you know, it wasn't in their favor to make the playoffs, but I think now it's safe to say that they're pretty comfortably going to be one of the teams, not only not in the playoffs, but not in the play-in. In fact, I wouldn't even be shocked if a team like Portland, who's played really, really well past them. But I do just want to say I'm not overly concerned about this long-term for San Antonio, because we've had players with things like this in the past. I know that in the case of like a Chris Bosh, it ended up being pretty much career ending, but Brandon Ingram actually had this exact same thing, the deep vein thrombosis, in the 2018-2019 season, and he missed the final 19 games of that year when he was with the Lakers, ends up getting traded to New Orleans in the offseason, but he made full recovery, and he was back not only good to go by the start of the next season, but he actually won Most Improved Player the next year, so it really didn't derail him at all. We haven't seen any issues from him since then, and so obviously fingers crossed, but I don't think this is going to be some long-term thing for him. It's more just a bummer that we don't get to watch Wemby, and it's a bummer that he's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year now because he's not going to have qualified by playing enough games. And what I will say, though, this could be a little bit of a blessing for the Spurs, only in the fact that like they can kind of silently take now. I mean, like when Fox doesn't play, it's going to be a rough watch for this team. And so they're not like that far out from getting in the top five pick territory. They currently have the league's 10th worst record, but they're only four games out of the sixth worst record and best odds to get the number one pick. So probably aren't going to get that low, just because, not that they aren't capable of losing that many games the rest of the way, but because, you know, a lot of the teams below them are also probably going to be losing a lot. So it's going to be pretty difficult to make up ground there. But in a tough Western Conference without their best player, it's certainly on the table that they could go through quite a rough patch here. And, you know, if they can add another like really solid young piece to this core with a top 10 pick, I'm sure nobody's going to be complaining, because they were always going to be a little bit ahead of schedule if they did make the playoffs this year anyway. And so I think next year is really, even regardless of this injury before it was reported or the condition, I think next year was always going to be the year for them to try to make a push. I think that another transaction cycle for them to add around Fox and Wembanyama, whether it be going all in for a bigger name and a star to pair next to those two guys, or just cleaning up around the edges of the roster a little bit more and adding some more higher impact role players, specifically some wings to pair with those two guys. But then you add another potential top 10 pick, and the Spurs have obviously drafted pretty well recently with Wemby 2 years ago. Stephon Castle looks like he is a nice get for them out of last year's draft. And so just add it to the list of highly coveted assets on this team, you know, whether it be to repurpose it or to help internally and just grow and develop these guys, depending on what timeline they want to go on. I do think with the Fox addition, they need to try to expedite this a little bit, at least get a little bit more on his timeline, because otherwise it doesn't make much sense for them to trade for him if they were just going to wait around for another 2 years before they try to go for it. But also, Wemby's that good. I mean, the dude is like probably a top 10 player at this point, even for all of the, like, I won't say shortcomings, but like, even though he's a little bit jump shot happy sometimes, and you prefer he'd be more towards the basket, even though he turns the ball over a lot, like he was -2,500 to win Defensive Player of the Year. That's how dominant he's been defensively, and he's going to continue to be. And he's really kind of came into himself a bit offensively down the stretch this season before this report. And so for San Antonio, I think this is just mostly a bummer because we don't get to watch Wemby anymore the rest of the season. It could be potential developmental reps that he's not getting, and reps with Fox that he's not getting, which he's going to need, because they're going to need to build up a good chemistry, which, to be honest, hasn't really been there. They've kind of struggled since adding him. The numbers back up that they haven't exactly been taking a step up since they added him. It's been a little clunky, but those kinks will get ironed out. And I think that those two are both good enough where I'm not worried about the fit, especially as they continue to add more pieces around them. But like I said, I'm not worried about long-term for this. And I even think that there's a world where this is kind of good, just in terms of the fact that maybe they can get a higher draft pick now and they don't have to worry about potentially pissing people off by doing kind of quiet tanking, but also they probably weren't going to work their ways up into the playoffs, at least not this season. So next year will be a big year for them, though. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. We've got games picking back up with a full slate tonight. We did have a game last night back from the All-Star break with Hornets and Lakers, but will be fun to have things back in the swing of it starting tonight with all the rest of the teams coming back and playing more games over the weekend. And we can kind of see where they're at post all-star break, post deadline. We'll start to get a really nice feel for, okay, who's trending up, who's trending down, who are legitimate contenders, who are not. And I know I've been teasing at this, but I do plan to have my post all-star break contender tiers coming out on my next episode over the next week or so. So with that said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.